It's time for Bleed Tech Blue Radio. This is your source for Louisiana Tech sports news. For the next 90 minutes, Bleed Tech Blue Radio goes deep inside La Tech football, basketball, and recruiting. Now here's your host, Jonathan Ford.
Welcome into Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. A week after a beatdown of UTEP by the Bulldogs, 55-3. Inside the Joe. Tech, of course, on a bye week. We'll get more into the UTEP talk in this show. A little basketball. Little Conference USA football. Little mid-season report. A little bit of everything with it being a bye week. We'll have Casey Bowman from GoMiddle.com talking Conference USA football with us at 6:45. But first, some sponsors.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Y Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Dowling Smokehouse. Join the conversation on the Keller Williams Parish Y Partners hotline, 888-993-7762, 888-993-7762. Of course, you can email your questions to radio at bleedtechblue.com, or you can use the hashtag BTBRadio and ask us your questions on Twitter, and we will read them on the air.
Well, not to toot my own horn, but that's kind of what I do a lot. 48-21, I normally say I can't remember it, but whenever I'm that close, and I'm the only one that had it even remotely close, I'm going to toot my own horn.
I still wouldn't say that being 18 points off of the losing team is that close.
But I said it was going to be a beatdown and they would get some garbage time scores, and they didn't get any garbage time scores.
Right, they didn't, because the twos and the threes stood up. And it was impressive to watch, even the second string.
That's clearly the most complete game we've seen Tech play this year. We saw glimpses of it in Lafayette and Denton, but they couldn't finish it. Well, they finished. They scored in all three phases. Special teams defense didn't score. Scored in two of the three phases, had forced five turnovers, so they basically scored in all phases. Scored 7 in the first quarter, 21 in the second, 20 in the third, and 7 in the fourth, and then had a interception in the final play to seal the win.
Yeah, and your boy Xavier Woods is now second in the country. 4 interceptions on the season, which is good enough for second in the NCAA and first in Conference USA, and had 2 of them off of Jamil Showers there in that UTEP game. Xavier Woods has played out of his mind so far this season, and just a sophomore.
And then not only is he just a sophomore, I think he played maybe 2 years of defense at West Monroe. He did not play 4 years of defense. He played offense before then. So this kid's been playing defense for 4 total years, 3.5 total years, and he's already this good.
Oh, yeah, I think you'll make a great point. I think Xavier will probably go down as one of the best safeties in Tech history.
That's a large statement. I mean, I think of probably in my time of covering Tech football, Antonio Baker's probably the best safety that I can remember Tech having. Antonio was more of a strong safety, kind of brought the wood, could cover as well, but Xavier is just kind of that center fielder that can run sideline to sideline and disrupt plays. But I can't argue with you. His early in his career, he's showing the ability to really be a special player. I think the key to Tech's success defensively this past week was the pressure, though. They haven't been able to get a whole lot of pressure with just the front four at all this year. I don't like that, but with Manny's defense, it's not imperative because of the different blitzes he dials up, and the blitzes that he dialed up Saturday were definitely on point.
Mitch Villamez had two tackles for a loss. Colby Brown had a sack. Colby Brown had an interception. Aaron Brown had a sack. Deldrick Canty had a sack for a loss of 11. Cedric Cooper had a sack. Overall, you're talking about, if you include the sacks and all the tackles for loss, you're talking about 11 different tackles for loss, and really they tallied up more than 30 lost yards as well. So Bulldogs were able to get to the quarterback, but were also able to stop Aaron Jones behind the line of scrimmage, to really bottle up that running game, stop Nathan Jeffrey behind the line of scrimmage, and it wasn't just, like you mentioned, it wasn't necessarily from that front four. Mitch Villamez from the linebacker position had a couple tackles for loss. Tony Johnson had a tackle for loss from the linebacker position. Terrell Pinson actually had a tackle for a loss as well. So, I mean, linebackers are getting in there too.
When you look at the total first down, and Tech operated, I don't know what the average starting field position for Tech was. But
actually, I was rewatching the broadcast, and the average starting field position going into the fourth, at the beginning of the fourth quarter, Louisiana Tech was starting with the ball around the 43.
The field position game was key all day. UTEP returner who caught the ball at the one, and his momentum did carry him out of bounds. It's not like he did it on purpose. But what you're doing, receiving a ball as you're running towards the sideline at full speed is beyond me. It should have just gone into the end zone. Nonetheless, Tech, they took over at the one, had 99 yards to go. I think Tech, did they force a three and out there? I think they did. Then Sokol had an interception. They started on the one again. So that whenever you have two possessions that start at the 1 yard line, you're really putting your offenses back against the wall. But you're going to take a turnover. I mean, it's not like they're going to say, "No, Tech, you have it. We don't want it at the one. Y'all take it." But the offense for all UTEP, I don't think anybody realized how bad it was. Yes, they had played some really bad defenses in New Mexico, New Mexico State, and Texas Tech, for that matter. Texas Tech's defense is not very good. But I don't think we understood that it was that bad.
Well, I think some looked at that Kansas State game, put up, 28 points, 4 touchdowns, had some success running the football against Kansas State 1 week after, Kansas State had looked so good. Kansas State had played so well against Auburn, and everybody had that in their mind. So people thought, well, maybe UTEP is a little bit better than we're giving them credit for. But as we mentioned last week on the show, Aaron Jones was not, I mean, he wasn't what his stats made him look like. And Louisiana Tech certainly proved that on Saturday.
Aaron, I mean, he's a special player, and he's going to have a career playing this game. There's little doubt in my mind, but
Louisiana Tech has done a good job against the run all season, and he had 18 carries for 63 yards with a long of 23. So, beside that play for 23, and then he had a reception of 53, when those were the only two plays that were over 20 yards that Louisiana Tech gave up the whole game.
When you look at we reevaluate the national statistical rankings each week. Tech is now 31st in passing yards allowed in the country at 205. Turnover margin, they're 41st. Team passing efficiency defense, they're 40th. We're beginning to see what we expected coming into this season, that the passing defense was the strength of the defense. They didn't have real great showings early. There's still not a lot of experience back there. When you look at Adarius Barnes, is really only his second year of starting at corner. With Xavier Woods in his second year starting, with Kentrell Bryce in the same scenario, your only veteran returning is Levander Liggins.
Well, then also you have to look at the teams that they play. The teams that they played, Trevor Knight, Oklahoma, Josh Greer, North Texas, Terrence Broadway at ULL. They're not trying to throw the ball. So it's hard for the secondary to make plays when the team they're playing is not throwing the ball anyway. So it did make them look a little less, What is the word?
Seasoned?
Yeah, seasoned, productive than they actually were.
And then rush defense, while this ranking doesn't sound good of 60th in the country, they're only giving up 150 yards on the ground, which is pretty good.
Well, that's considering the 250-something that Auburn put on them as well. You have to take that into account when you do those averages. So, no, I would say that's not bad at all.
And even if you average it for an entire season, 150 yards on the ground, you've done a pretty good job. Offensively, the numbers don't pop off the page. Passing offense 58th in the country, team passing efficiency 55th in the country, scoring offense is 45th. That's pretty good. Total defense is 40th, like we've been talking about with the defense. Rushing offense only 82nd. Total offense, rushing offense 82nd, total offense is 88th. So no, the offensive numbers aren't jumping off the page, but whenever you have bad offensive showings and you've played guys like Oklahoma where you only scored 16 points, Auburn where you only scored 17, that's going to happen.
Yeah, all of these averages, you know, one showing like that, especially at this point of the season, can bring down your average considerably. But just like with the defensive statistics, though, anytime you're inside the top 50 and you're a school that's one of the group of five schools, you have to be pleased with that, no matter whether it's on the offensive side of the ball or the defensive side of the ball. The top, regardless, it makes it sound as though you're not ranked that high, but when you're in the top 50, you're in that, you know, top half of the country, and that's right where you want to be when you're a program this size.
The one concern to me going forward for the Bulldogs is the injuries. There is a silver lining to that, that Tech was missing, what, three starters against UTEP and still beat somebody 55-3? You're missing your starting nickelback and Bryson Abraham. Paul Turner, you're missing. Vontarius Dora. Blake Martin was missing. So that you're missing four easily and you're two deep. And you still beat somebody like a drum. That's a good sign, but they're starting to add up. Xavier Woods went out last week, but they say that it's just a bruise on his knee, and he should be back. Carlos Henderson went out. I think it was a shoulder. It didn't appear to be separated. They didn't have him in a sling during the game, so he should be okay. Kenneth Dixon played through. He's been playing through a foot injury for the last 2 weeks. All this to say, this bye week is coming at the perfect time. Vontarius Dora, in my opinion, will probably be back after the bye week. All of these guys that we just said that have been hurt will be pretty healthy. I mean, nobody's 100% healthy in the middle of the season. This is football we're talking about. It's not tiddlywinks. And you're gonna be injured. It's just the nature of the beast. So I think that Tech should be at full strength as far as numbers go by UTSA in 2 weeks, which, yep, of course, will be, they found out that Monday, will kick off at 11 a.m. Yeah, that's early. Yeah, it stinks for tickets. Yeah, it stinks for tailgating. Get over it. TV dictates all this.
Sure, and you must, Louisiana Tech fans and us as well are all excited about, we're pleased with the TV, the TV package that Conference USA has been able to provide Louisiana Tech and the exposure that has given them. So what? You have to have a couple of 11 a.m., actually three, 11 a.m. kickoffs. It's the nature of the beast. You get on TV when you can get on.
And it's Fox Sports Net. It's not.
Yeah.
Yes, the Fox College Sports isn't on as many households,
sure,
as you might like. Fox Sports Net is.
Right. And you, there's not very many games to choose from at 11 a.m. So,
which is why it's happening at 11 a.m.
Exactly. But, it gives you a chance to get some more exposure, and everyone's happy with that. So, also, with it being UTSA, San Antonio is a pretty long drive. I would imagine that there won't be a whole, they may not travel as well as they would have with it if it was an afternoon kickoff, that it's, being 11 a.m.
I hear that argument, but the flip side of that is now you won't have to stay a night in Ruston Saturday night. You'll have to stay a night in Ruston Friday night.
Yeah, but you'd have to leave. I mean, it's a long drive. You'd have to leave Friday morning, miss a day of work to try to come out. I mean,
it's probably, a 6-hour drive, 7-hour drive? Leave when you get off of work and get in at midnight. We're talking about adults here and college students.
We'll see. We'll see what it's like. There's no way it's over 1,000 people. I would say it's less than 500 people.
I made the North Texas drive to Denton in one day. Yes, that was brutality. but it's possible.
Well, there's a difference in a guy who covers the team and a fan, a casual fan. So we'll see. We'll see.
Let's take this break. Other side of the break, we'll talk more UTEP, Louisiana Tech, and more of that beatdown that happened in Ruston Saturday, 55-3. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio here on ESPN Radio 97.7. John's found us some new tunes, and I appreciate it. A couple of sponsors, and we'll get more into this UTEP talk.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7, brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Dowling Smokehouse. Give us a call on Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners Hotline, 888-993-7762, 888-993-7762. Email your questions to radio at bleedtechblue.com, or, of course, you can tweet us your questions with the hashtag BTB Radio.
You know, something you talked about, Jared, with the defense and some of the young players with Cedric Cooper, Deldrick Canty, Russell Ferris.
Roland Dunn Jr. got in.
Roland Dunn, he played mostly because of the injury to Bryson Abraham, but nonetheless, he's getting valuable experience. Then you look at Carlos Henderson, a redshirt freshman. Jared Kraft, a true freshman. I never dreamed that Tech would get this kind of production at a freshman, whether true or redshirt.
Even Marcus Gaines, he looked exceptional Saturday night.
Marcus has been really the third or fourth. He's been really the fourth outside receiver this year. Never thought that I'd see Tech play a 5'5". He's listed at 5'6". He's not 5'6". Sorry, Marcus, if you're listening. 5'5" outside receiver. Normally, your outside receivers are the guys that can go up and get a ball downfield. Unless he has a 50-inch vertical, you're not throwing him any jump balls. But the one-handed catch he had in the end zone is one of the best catches that has ever happened in Joe Ice Stadium.
No doubt about it.
He just put his paw out. The ball hits it. He hauls it in. He only had 1 foot in, but that's all that matters in NCAA football. But I was shocked.
You mentioned freshmen and redshirt freshmen, but even sophomores, the two most productive players on the defense side and the offensive side of the ball, arguably, are Xavier Woods and Trent Taylor, who are both only in their second years at Tech. You know, of course, Trent got a significant playing time last year in 2013, but boy, he and Sokol have built a rapport pretty quickly, and he's become Sokol's top target. I mean, he's got 31 catches, he's got over 300 yards, he's got a couple of touchdowns, and then we've already talked about Xavier Woods, his 4 interceptions, and those are both just second-year players.
We talked about it in the hallway before the show started. If Tech can find a way, whether it is Price Wilson or Ryan Higgins can find a way to really improve his game, Tech could be even better next year.
Yeah, I mean, you return a lot. Now, like you mentioned, you know, off the air, Louisiana Tech does lose some key components of that offensive line, but you've got, as you mentioned,
Mitchell Bell. That's
right, mainly Mitchell Bell. Shane Carpenter should be able to step in and fill a role.
Or Chris Ie, has played well. He played against UTEP, and he played okay. Another redshirt freshman.
Right, and don't forget, you've got Kirby Wixom for 3 seasons. It's not two. It's not the regular 2 seasons out of a JUCO. You've got
David
3 years.
With 3, and I think you also have Joseph Brunson for 3. So there's that's the interior of the offensive line for 3 years.
Yeah, yeah. And Matt Moore has proven that he can do a lot with a little. In a second season, that offensive line has improved by leaps and bounds.
Is Darryl Brown's a sophomore?
There you go.
So he was really a redshirt freshman last year.
You're not losing as much from the offensive line as you thought either. And then you've got Carlos Henderson at wide receiver. You've got Trent Taylor at wide receiver.
Marcus
Gaines still, yeah, yeah.
Marlon Watts will be a redshirt freshman next year. Let's hope that he can gain the weight like Carlos Henderson did in his redshirt year. Carlos Henderson went from 165 to about 190. Marlon Watts is 6'4 and about 160 pounds right now. So let's get him to 200 pounds before his sophomore year. And he's huge. And then sitting out this year, Cam McKnight.
Right, yeah.
Probably the most prized recruit in the 2014 class.
And if Tevin King could get healthy, he could possibly be a weapon down the road.
It's Tech. What we've seen so far from, let's go ahead and say it, ULL, North Texas, and UTEP, is from their peer schools, Tech is faster than them. There's more speed.
That was one of the biggest takeaways I took from the UTEP game was just the team speed and even the size. The size of UTEP's offensive line and defensive line, they weren't as big as Louisiana Tech, but the overall team speed, UTEP was not even close to as fast as Louisiana Tech was. It looked like two teams that were not at the same level. It looked like, I'm not going to say that UTEP looked like an FCS school, but they kind of looked like an FCS school.
I read on a fan, of course, these message boards, you're going to see these kind of people, but somebody said, Louisiana Tech just made us look like an FCS team playing a Power 5 school.
Yeah, that was what it looked like without, you know, I didn't want to sound like a homer and come out and say that, but it was absolutely...
Oh, the caveat that makes you even look more like a homer.
Right. Well, true. But, and, you know, we had the guy from UTEP on last week, and he said, at the risk of sounding like a homer, I think this is going to be a barn burner, and it's going to be high scoring, and UTEP's going to, you know, hang with them and all that stuff. Well, it's... Not the
sorry.
Case. Yeah. 52 point. That 52 point margin of victory was the biggest for Louisiana Tech since the year 2000 against Mississippi Valley State, and was the largest.
An FCS team.
Right. Exactly. And the largest conference game margin of victory since 1963 against Northeastern, ULM.
Nobody expected that.
No, you can safely say that no one expected that. And some were even Sean Isabella even was saying that, you know, he thought the line was a little high at 9 and 9.5 and
12 at game time.
Right, yeah. So
open at 13.5. We agreed at the beginning of last week's show. By the end of the last week's show, we had all talked ourselves out of the fact that maybe Vegas was onto something and they weren't quite onto it enough.
Right.
Now, the line, UTEP's not that bad, and Tech's not that good. Whenever you have when a route starts happening, it just snowballs. The line probably should have been 20 or 24, not 53.
Right, no, certainly not 53, but even the over-under, actually, the over-under was very close
60.
Because UTEP didn't score any points.
How about the block, the play we haven't talked about that may be minus Marcus Gaines' one-handed catch?
Up to that point, it was the play of the whole year.
The blocked field goal.
Unbelievable play.
Holtz, after the game, said that Manny Diaz came to him Saturday morning and said, "Hey, coach, I found a weakness in their field goal protection. I think we can exploit it. Let's save it for a field goal so we're not wasting it on a extra point so that we're returning it for one or two. Let's do it for a field goal, first field goal opportunity." Here comes Lloyd Grogan.
Untouched.
That's another one we haven't talked about.
Lloyd Grogan came through untouched, too.
Redshirt freshman, Lloyd Grogan.
Yeah, came through untouched. Didn't just get a hand on it, but blocked.
On the replay, I think I hear it hit twice. I think Lloyd got it, then somebody else got it.
Well, it almost looked on the replay as though LeVander Liggins was there close as well on the block, and then took off running upfield and just got it kind of pitched back to him and took it the rest of the way himself, which LeVander, I mean, was very fast in high school. He played wildcat, wide receiver, punt returner,
Jason,
everything.
Jason Jones, LeVander's senior year, went and watched him play West Monroe, and he scored three or four touchdowns, maybe I think it was three or four, in the first half against the Rebels. And West Monroe, being as well coached as any high school team as you'll see in the country, they made some adjustments, and LeVander didn't see the ball the rest of the game.
Yeah, i.e. keep the ball away from LeVander as much as possible.
We see that the Wampus Cats of Leesville High School have one thing, and his name is LeVander Liggins. Let's keep the ball from getting to his hands, and this game's over. And they were right. Let's take a break. Other side of the break, a little Conference USA football talk. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com and host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jared, a couple of sponsors. Then we'll get into the thing that the wild and crazy Western Division of Conference USA football.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Dowling Smokehouse. Join the conversation. Give us a call. Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners hotline, 888-993-7762, 888-993-7762. Of course, you can email your questions to us at radio@bleedtechblue.com, or you can use Twitter with hashtag BTBRadio, and we will answer your questions on the air.
Western Division of Conference USA isn't as wacky as last week in all of college football, but it is getting interesting. Everybody expected UTSA to really, really and truly run away with the Western Division. They lose at home to New Mexico, 21-9, a New Mexico team that UTEP beat. Everybody likes to talk about common opponents. There's you a common opponent. And that's just bizarre. And the week before, UTSA lost to FAU, who got embarrassed by the Panthers of FIU, 38-10.
FIU, could have been argued that FIU was the worst, the second worst school in Conference USA, only ahead of Southern Miss, at the beginning of the season, and now they've got three wins and beat FAU, which was a surprise. FAU was supposed to be one of the schools that was on the rise and would, be in the fight for second or third place there on the eastern side.
38-10, FIU beats Florida Atlantic at home. I don't think Florida Atlantic prefers FAU, but FIU prefers FIU. You got to get the nomenclature correct.
That's kind of like
I just dropped the word nomenclature.
ULM prefers ULM, and ULL, we don't.
Who knows what they prefer? They prefer something that's illegal.
Right, yeah, who knows?
Marshall traveled to Old Dominion, and they're good.
Embarrassed Old Dominion.
It was 28-7 after the first. They scored 14 more in the second. It was over. They might as well have just raised the white flag after the first quarter. It was bad. Southern Miss, surprise, 31-37, lose on the road at Middle Tennessee, scored 19 in the fourth. It may be more indicative of how bad Middle Tennessee's defense is than anything. Middle Tennessee does not have a good defense, but moved into 3-0 in the Eastern Division. It seems to be a two-horse race in the Eastern Division. Really, in Middle Tennessee and Marshall will square off Saturday, 11 a.m. They're in that 11 a.m. Florida Fox Sports Net time slot against Marshall.
You know, FIU is 2-0 in the Eastern Division as well, believe it or not.
Their defense is good. FIU has a good defense. They have some ball hawks. They intercept the ball. Their defense will keep them in games, and that's what's happened thus far. Indiana all over North Texas, 49-24. Kind of surprised in that one. Like we said, UTSA loses at home to New Mexico, 21-9. We'll talk a little more about UTSA since that is Tech's next opponent inside the Joe, 11 a.m. on the 18th. Hawaii traveled to Rice. Rice victorious, 28-14. UAB traveled to Bowling Green, Kentucky, knocked off the Hilltoppers, 42-39. That's probably the biggest surprise of the weekend.
Western Kentucky now falls to 0-2 in conference play. Yeah, I was surprised as well.
Both those teams they don't have a defense.
Right, no. And Western Kentucky, who I've been saying could be the second most difficult opponent left on Tech's schedule there, right behind UTSA. But, they get them in Joe IA. Western Kentucky gave up 183 yards and two touchdowns to Jordan Howard. So Jordan Howard had a very productive game, as well as
his, just like he always does,
as well as his backup who had 76 yards. So Western Kentucky has once again shown that they're not great at stopping the run, and Louisiana Tech, they have a couple of good running backs.
They do. You look at the Massey ratings like we look at each week. When the season opened, I think they had Tech going 2-10, something along those lines.
Right, yeah. I know it was 2-10.
And now they have Tech winning out with the percentages, which would finish the year 9-3.
What?
Massey, your computer was drunk early in the year.
Well, that's why you play. You know, that's the
you
reason
play
why
to
you
win
play
the game.
Yeah, that's the reason why you play the games, yeah. And you don't just do these simulations and computers and all that stuff. I mean Louisiana Tech, and no one expected them. I don't think anybody at the beginning of the season expected them to potentially win out in conference play. I don't think anybody saw that coming. I don't think anybody saw UTSA sitting at 1-4 going into the week before Tech and UTSA would face off.
The lowest percentage of victory left on the schedule, Rice at 53%, the last game of the year. A game that may be for nothing. I think Tech may have the Western Division locked up by then.
Well, right now, Tech's the only one that doesn't have a loss on the western side of Conference USA. Rice is sitting at 1-1. North Texas, UTEP, UTSA, all 0-1. Southern Miss is now 0-2. By the time you get to that game, I feel like Massey may still be a little high on Rice.
I think so too. They have that 30-28 is what they have that final being.
Yeah, I still think they're still a little too high on Rice.
They have Tech number 88 in the country, Rice number 94. Met Western Kentucky 97. That's the highest, and then 107 for UT San Antonio, UTSA. Another more nomenclature. They don't like UT San Antonio. It is UTSA, just like it's UTEP. I feel good about the rest of this season. I didn't anticipate Tech the offense being as good as it is. I didn't anticipate the defense being this good. And to think that they're going to get arguably their second best defensive lineman back for UTSA in Vontarius Dorr.
I think you make a great point. I think Tech could easily win out, but the key to the season for Tech will be, like you pointed out off the air, is they have to remain focused. We saw what happens when they lose focus as they fail to Northwestern State.
You got to – with the seniors and as many seniors there are on this roster – They've got to keep them focused. You can't let the younger guys. There's a lot of young guys getting a lot of playing time. You got to keep your focus and can't let the record and the scoreboard go to your head. There's a lot of people who question why Skip Holtz left his starters in as long as he did against UTEP. That's why. You can't let people get complacent. It's not a. I think I like this quote. He's full of one-liners. We all know that at his press conferences. But this is not a participation sport. Is so true. You look at the ULL game and the North Texas game. They put guys in to keep people from getting hurt, and they lost that lead. It didn't look as lopsided as it probably should have, because guys weren't ready. You have to make sure that you're putting in the homework. You're watching film. And you're not just expecting, well, eventually I'm going to get in, because that's just the way it works. You're a former college athlete. I mean, how much homework happens behind the scenes?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You got to put in the work if you want to have the opportunity to produce, not only to produce, but to help your team win games. Because at the end of the day, that's what a coach is evaluated on.
And then let's look a little bit more at UTSA. I don't think we realized how much – what was last year's quarterback at UTSA's name?
Eric Sosa. Well, Sosa. With
Sosa.
A Z. Yeah.
I don't think we realized how much glue he was to that team last year. They changed the quarterback. He's a transfer, junior college transfer, and they just haven't been very good.
Tucker Carter is the one that I've seen the most of. Tucker Carter did not play. He went 4 of 8 for 60 yards, but Blake Bogenschutz went.
God bless you. Gesundheit.
Yeah, Gesundheit. Freshman, true freshman quarterback, Carthage, Texas, went 10 of 16 for 169 yards and an interception against New Mexico last week. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, whether Tech sees Tucker Carter or sees Bogan Schutz. And I mean, Carter hasn't looked good. And when you, he's a senior, obviously he's been behind Sosa his whole career, so he hasn't had a lot of playing time. He's thrown 4 interceptions this season. He's been sacked 9 times. 68 of 119 on the year, 732 yards, which doesn't sound like bad numbers, but they lost to Arizona State and he threw an interception. They lost to Arizona and threw a pick. Was not good against Oklahoma State. Threw 2 interceptions against Florida Atlantic. Threw another one against New Mexico. And he's only thrown 2 touchdowns all season. So if Tucker Carter isn't the answer, then you have to think that Manny Diaz would be licking his chops at the opportunity to play against a true freshman quarterback there, you know, behind that offensive line that hasn't been able to hold up. It hasn't been able to keep Tucker Carter on his feet, hadn't been able to keep up. Bogan Schutz got sacked 3 times against New Mexico.
That last name's incredible.
Got sacked 3 times against New Mexico. So you have to think the defense, the Louisiana Tech's defensive line and those outside linebackers would feast on a true freshman quarterback behind a shaky offensive line.
When you look at the UTSA statistical rankings, total offense, they're 115th. Rushing offense, they're 106th. Passing efficiency, 107. Scoring offense, 104, 21.8 points a game. Third down conversion percentage, 111. 33%. It's not good.
This game might not be very close. Might be like UTEP.
Their defense, total defense, they're 63rd in the country. That's respectable. Rushing defense, 62nd at 151 yards a game. That's not bad. Passing yards allowed, they're 59th at 232 yards per game. I think a lot of the reason that they've been losing is because their defense is out on the field so long.
Yeah, and that very well could be the case. I mean, but when you look at this UTSA schedule, the only victory they've got is over Houston. Houston's 2-3 on the year with, I mean, one of their wins is over Grambling State and the other one's over UNLV. So Houston dropped one to UTSA, dropped one to BYU, dropped one to UCF, which are not necessarily bad opponents. But, I mean, they're not doing a lot. And that offense is not ranked very high in any statistical categories. They can't run the ball.
The surprise is, though, that UTSA was able to move the ball against them whenever their passing defense, passing yards allowed for Houston is their number 7 in the country. And team passing efficiency defense, they're number 5.
But, again, they've played UNLV, Grambling State, BYU, who does nothing but run the ball.
That's true.
And UCF. So your passing defense may look good because you haven't played anybody that throws.
Similar to UTEP and their passing and their rushing offense.
Right, exactly. You play against a bunch of teams that can't stop the run.
That's a fair point. Let's take this break. Other side of the break, we'll have Casey Bowman from GoMiddle.com to give a little perspective on the Eastern Division of Conference USA. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Welcome into Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jared, a couple of sponsors, then we'll get to Casey on the phones.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Y Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Dowling Smokehouse. Join us just as Casey has on the Keller Williams Parish Y Partners hotline, 888-993-7762.
Casey, how's it going, my man?
Doing good, man. How are you?
Doing wonderful. Well, just give us a little perspective on the Eastern Division of Conference USA. Is it as obvious to us over here in the Western Division that Marshall is running away with it and will probably?
Yeah, Yeah, you know, I think we're kind of talking about the same time we did last year too, when we had this conversation. And it, you know, you definitely get the feel that Marshall is kind of, you know, heads and tails or head and shoulders, you know, a little bit above the rest. Obviously, Middle Tennessee is off to a great start in conference play, but and we're going to really find out what the Blue Raiders are all about this weekend as they travel to Marshall. So I think that's really going to kind of clear up the picture for us after this weekend.
And you and I talked via text. I think it was last night. And you talked about defensively for the Blue Raiders, and because that's Southern Miss scored 19 in the fourth quarter. Is that really what made you talk about the defense? Is they haven't really been able to close games out, and they've let people back into games?
Well, if you go back even the last few years, kind of the philosophy around Middle's defense has been this, you know, bend but don't break type of mantra that Steve Ellis and Tyrone Nix have incorporated. And, you know, a lot of that could be due to injuries or just, you know, personnel issues that they've had and trying to get their own guys into the mix. But, you know, this year that mantra hasn't really worked out too well. It's been a lot of breaking and you know, not a lot of bending. Now, you know, to their credit, they still produce a lot of turnovers, which was their saving grace last year. They're not on the same pace that they were on last year this year, but, you know, that's kind of helped them out, especially in some key situations late in games. But, you know, yeah, you look at Southern Miss, that's a prime example of, you know, a team that they had. You know, they had down by a couple scores at halftime, really kind of jumped on them early there in that fourth quarter after, you know, kind of a lackluster third quarter. But then they let them right back into it. And, you know, if Southern Miss recovers that onside kick there, you know, in the waning seconds of the game, then all of a sudden, you know, you're looking at a potential major upset there. So a lot of cause, you know, a lot of reason for concern. You know, when you look at Middle Tennessee and this defensive unit, you know, it was supposed to be the strongest unit of the team this year. There was a lot of question marks on offense, and it's really kind of been the complete, you know, flip there. The offense has played really well in the majority of their games, and the defense has just kind of been limping along.
For Louisiana Tech, of course, Southern Miss is a team that they consider a rival with that rivalry and Dixie game that will happen in a couple of weeks. Is Southern Miss better? Are they close to being back to their old selves, or would you say they still are a few years away from that?
You know, I do think they're better. I really, really like their quarterback, Nick Mullins. He's actually a guy that Middle was recruiting last year, whenever he was coming out. So he's a guy that I've kind of known a little bit about since his high school days, and I was impressed with him in high school. And he really showed a lot, you know, especially against Middle. I thought he had great pocket awareness, you know, late down that game, made smart decisions, you know, with the ball, and really just kind of played to his team's strengths. They've got some talent on that team, especially on that front seven. And then even in that backfield, you know, they've got some pieces in place, but you know, they're definitely not back. You know, that I think is a given. You know, the wins they've had have come against some lackluster competition, and but you know, you look at a guy like Todd Monken, who's only in his second year there. You know, that fan base is one that, as you know, they clamor, you know, for success. So, you know, you just kind of hope that a guy like him will get his fair shake and you know, get the time to bring the talent in that he wants to bring in and kind of turn that program around. At the end of the day, you know, a good Southern Miss program is good for the conference. You know, they're pretty steep in tradition when it comes to Conference USA. So, you know, you hate to see them at the bottom, but I do think they're on the way back up, but they're not quite there yet.
Would you say offensively, really, their struggles are on that offensive line like they have been for the last couple of years?
Yeah, definitely there, and I think they've got some pieces at the wideout position, but I didn't really see anybody who kind of blew me away, you know, last weekend. But definitely that up front unit, they've got some work to do there. But you know, that's going to come down to recruiting, and you know, and obviously avoiding the injury bug and things of that nature. But yeah, definitely you hit the nail on the head there.
And what about FIU? Do you think they're for real? And is it a surprise?
Yeah, talk about surprise. Heading into last week, I made a comment to someone. I was talking about, you know, hey, these Florida schools look like they're really starting to put it together. And I was really talking more about Florida Atlantic. I thought that they were kind of on the uptick there. And then they go in and really got manhandled, it seems like, by this FIU team. So I really don't know what to think of them right now. You know, they're sitting at 3-3. They're 2-0 in the conference. They're in a really good spot, you know, as we start to head down the stretch here. But, you know, a lot of just unknowns with this team, you know, from the coaching staff down to personnel. bump. You know, there was a lot of attrition there, but you got to give credit to that staff. They've really kind of stuck through things and found a, you know, a model that's working for them, and they're going to ride it out to the end. So whether they're for real or not, I don't know. I tend to lean on the not quite there side of things, but man, you know, that was a big statement for them this last weekend.
And of course, the conference is sitting at an odd number right now. I believe it's, what is it, 13, 6-7 on the eastern side and 6 on the western side.
Yeah.
They add Charlotte next year. It seems like the obvious choice, I don't think they've announced it yet, will be UAB to slide to the west. Is that what you're hearing as well?
Yeah, we've heard that. You know, I think, you know, there was talk of Middle or Western, and, you know, kind of moving over. But I know when Middle was initially in talks, that you know, that was their desire, was to stay in the East. So I don't think you'll see them slide. Obviously, the Florida schools aren't going anywhere. So I really think, you know, UAB is kind of that one team left, the odd man out, so to speak.
I know they don't want to, and they've got a pretty good rivalry there with Middle, correct? And then also, you got a long way to go from Birmingham to, I guess, your closest then would be Tech and Southern Miss and Hattiesburg. So I can understand why they don't want it, because they've got such long road trips ahead of them.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's the you know, the number one aspect right there is, you know, travel costs these days, and everything is just kind of through the roof. I don't blame them, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's going to be for, you know, better makeup in the conference. You know, perhaps if we ever see, you know, Conference USA jump up to 16 teams, as has been suggested in the past, then, you know, maybe they shift back over. But you know, you got to trust in you know, Commissioner Banowski on that one.
You know, I told you that we would just talk about football, but we'll switch gears. Have you paid any attention to the poll that came out today about Conference USA basketball?
No, actually not much. I do know that Middle started their practice, their official first practice today. Catch a glimpse of the renovations and everything that they've done inside Murphy Center, and the you know, the arena looks great right now. But go ahead and enlighten me.
Well, Tech was picked to win the conference, which I don't think is a surprise to anyone because of what they return. They had two on the off conference team. With UTEP was picked to finish second. Talk to us about what maybe Middle's. I know Middle lost a good bit off of last year's team, but I know Kermit's gonna rebuild.
Yeah, absolutely, and no surprise there with Tech. Obviously, I think they're the front runners there. UTEP as well. I think both those teams have a lot coming back. Southern Miss on the east there, on the west, they're going to have their own agenda going into this year. But you know, for Middle, yeah, I mean, you know, when you lose a guy like Sean Jones, you know, Conference Player of the Year, you know, obviously people are going to look at that and think, man, you know, Middle might take a step back. But you know, if there's one thing that Kermit Davis has been able to do well these last few seasons, this Middle's had this kind of run here, is really kind of find that one guy, you know, whether it's out of the JUCO ranks or be a transfer or what have you, that can come in and be an impact type player. I don't know that they've necessarily got that this year, but we didn't necessarily, you know, expect to see that kind of performance out of Sean Jones last year either. So, you know, the one thing Kermit will do is he's a great X's and O's coach, and he can really coach up, you know, the players who will take to it, you know, if you know what I'm saying. So there's a lot of unknowns on the roster right now, a lot of talent. You know, they did bring up, you know, some talented JUCO players, but, you know, then again, these kids have never played, you know, at this level, you know, and against some of the competition they're going to go up against. So a lot of question marks on the team this year, very much like last year, to be honest. But I think last year the expectations were probably a little higher. I think the general consensus, you know, around this team is wouldn't be shocked to see them take a step back. I still think they'll be competitive in that upper echelon, you know, in the East Division there. But I think there might be, you know, another year away from kind of getting back into contention.
Casey, we appreciate you joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Casey. You can find Casey on Twitter at GoMiddle for GoMiddle.com. He runs the MiddleTennesseeRivals.com site. Go check him out. You won't be disappointed. He knows his Blue Raider sports. Let's take this break. Other side of the break, we'll give our it was basketball. We're going to talk a little Louisiana Tech basketball. Sorry, I've gotten this outline all messed up in my head. A little Louisiana Tech basketball in this next segment, and then the final segment, we'll give our mid-season report on Bulldog football. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Well, make me better. Welcome into Bleed Tech Blue Radio and ESPN Radio 97.7. Little Louisiana Tech basketball talk, Conference USA basketball talk. And then we'll finish out the show in there in the 7:15 hour. Garrett, a couple of sponsors.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 brought to you by Keller Williams Parishwide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Dowling Smokehouse. Join the conversation. Talk some Louisiana Tech basketball with us. Keller Williams Parishwide Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. 888-993-7762. Of course, you can email your questions to us at radio@bleedtechblue.com or use the hashtag BTB Radio on Twitter, and we'll answer your questions on the air.
Like we talked about with Casey, Tech is voted the favorite to win Conference USA by the league coaches, with UTEP in second place, which neither are a surprise. One of those two, in my opinion, will win the league. I think they are. They're better than everybody else, and I'm not sure it's real close. Southern Miss lost a ton. They've got a new coach. UAB has underperformed. They really underperformed last year. There's no reason to think that they're going to overperform this year. Charlotte's going to be pretty good. Middle Tennessee, we just talked to Casey. He agrees that they're going to be a little down. Western Kentucky, the newcomer, they're a dark horse candidate. They could make a run. Then you look at the preseason all-conference team. Pierre Henry from Charlotte, the senior from Charleston, West Virginia. Raheem Appleby from Tech. Alex Hamilton from Tech. Speedy Smith from Tech. Tech had the most players on the team at three. Aaron Bacote from Old Dominion. CJ Washington from UAB. Vince Hunter, the freak, from UTEP. Julian Washburn from UTEP. George Fant from Western Kentucky. And Louisiana product, T.J. Price at Western Kentucky. Fun fact, Louisiana Tech actually wanted T.J. Price to play D-end. So
he plays guard for Western Kentucky.
He's a three. It would be hard to call him a guard. I would put an F by his name for four.
Kind of a forward/guard.
Yeah, he's a 2-3 guy.
I gotcha.
He can knock down a three, but I wouldn't say that he's...
Maybe he's a... Would you consider him a stretch four?
Yeah, but a stretch four, you'd normally put an F next to his name and call him a forward.
Well, that's true. But regardless, he and Fant are both seniors, and Fant averaged a little over 13 a game and 6.5 rebounds per game last season in the Sun Belt.
And Fant is a hometown boy from Bowling Green, Kentucky, so I bet that's been a special career for them, seeing him play. So that's got to be neat. But you talk about Louisiana Tech. I watched them Saturday at practice inside the TAC at about 10 o'clock in the morning. They're long. They're big. Right now, Jacoby Boykins, the freshman out of St. Pete, Florida, is hurt. He had surgery, I believe, on his wrist or his hand. I believe he broke it during the Bahamas tour. So he'll be back I think Coach White said 4 weeks.
Yeah, he mentioned it'll be 4 weeks.
And then Deion Griffin, he's a little nicked up. I'm not exactly sure what's going on with him. He will be back in a couple of weeks. He's another freshman from the Tampa, St. Pete area. Who else is nicked up? I think that's basically it. Raheem Appleby is back to his old self.
Yeah, to quote Michael White Monday, he said Raheem is 100% no issue whatsoever. So good to hear, because Raheem was not himself at the end of last season and really wasn't himself in the conference tournament either.
Somebody asked the question about how do you replace Keon McNeil, and I've asked the same question to him, and his answer is correct, even though it sounds like coach speak. You can't replace a Keon McNeil because of what he meant to the roster. He embraced that six-man role, which is what he was. Was a strong defensive player. Was deadly from the corner. That was Keon McNeil's spot. I think they're gonna fill that three-point shooter role by committee. That's what Coach White said, and I think they'll do it by volume. They're going to shoot a lot of balls at from the three-point line. Xavier Stapleton, the freshman out of Madison, Mississippi, he's the most ready true freshman of the bunch, and he's 6'6". And when I tell you he elevates on a three-pointer like I've never seen, nobody can get to it. When he jumps, he releases the ball at the top of his jump. It would take Janiah White at 7 feet tall jumping to block his shot.
And, you know, Mike Heiser was there Monday as well, and he mentioned the length on that team and talked about, you know, how Janiah White is not only taller than him but is longer than him, and it's made it interesting in practice. He's a shot blocker as well. But, no, speaking with those, you know, close to the team and stuff, Xavion Stapleton has the highest release. His release is higher than Eric McCree, who stands, you know, 2 inches taller than him, who Coach White mentioned will also step
McCree's
out.
A freak.
Will also step out and shoot threes. But he mentioned Eric McCree. He mentioned Xavion Stapleton. He said that Raheem Appleby has looked good so far shooting the three ball, that Speedy Smith has improved his stroke. Which
that Boykins is really the best shooter, but, of course, he's coming off the wrist/hand injury.
Right, which I'm glad that you brought Boykins back up, because it does bring an interesting point. Anytime you're talking about a freshman at the beginning of practice is going to miss 4 weeks, you'd almost say that it would be hard to see him being able to really contribute any significant playing time or minutes. However, just like we talked about Monday in the press conference, and really I think it was your comment, that's where that trip to the Bahamas really pays dividends, because Jacoby Boykins got to see real playing time, regardless of the competition or level of competition. We got to see real playing time in games, and is further along now than he certainly would be at this point. And having about to miss 4 weeks, so that experience is absolutely invaluable.
You talk about this team and what they would be like without the Bahamas, and we would be wondering until February, I think, how good they are. Now, luckily, you can in college basketball, you can wait until February to show up, because it's a "what have you done for me lately" thing. The fact that they've had the Bahamas under their belt, the one thing I will say, December 30th is the game that they've been looking for an opponent in that game, trying to find a D1. Coach White talked about the non-conference schedule, how he's disappointed by it. They called teams all over the country trying to get them to play them, and they wouldn't, because Tech's good and they can't afford to lose a game at home. Like, they very well may if they play Louisiana Tech at home. So that December 30th game, he's not been able to fill with a D1, and he's got to, you think they opened, did he say they opened the conference schedule with three on the road? Is that
right? Three consecutive on the road, including one at Southern Miss.
So he didn't want to go on the road to play somebody. Couldn't convince any D1s to come play in Ruston. From what I understand, they'll play Centenary in Ruston December 30th. I feel for Centenary.
Right. Actually, I read earlier today, I read an article in I'm not sure what paper it was, but it was from 1926. Centenary beat the Louisiana Polytechnic, whatever's 26-13 or something like that.
In football.
In
basketball.
In basketball.
26-13.
26-13 in basketball. And the big scorer,
maybe they were counting by one.
The high scorer of the game had they said that he really shot well and filled the bucket with three baskets. It's just unbelievable. Like, it was a crazy, a really cool article to read. But
Centenary used to be really good at men's basketball. It's a shame that they're not still D1. You think about Robert Parrish, the Chief, who played, had a really long career in the NBA, came from Centenary. College athletics has just gotten too expensive for small private schools like Centenary to make a go of it. That's not to take too big of a tangent, but that's kind of what makes a place like Rice and Tulsa such a marvel, is that they're able to financially afford it and have enrollment of 5,000, 6,000, 7,000.
Well, Tulsa's actually smaller than 5,000 this year. They're right around 4,400 this year. Unbelievable.
I went to high school with that many people, and you're trying to field a Division I football team playing a budget where you're playing teams, you're playing in a conference where you're playing teams in Connecticut. You're going to charter a plane to Connecticut that's it's crazy talk. Now they don't have a big stadium just like Tech doesn't, so you don't have a bunch of season ticket holders, and you can't because your alumni base isn't big. They do play in a larger metropolitan area, but Tulsa doesn't move. It's like Tulane. Tulsa doesn't move the needle in sports in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's OU, it's the Thunder, it's Oklahoma State. It's not good. Getting back to Louisiana Tech basketball. Sorry, you talk about Janiah White. I didn't think that Tech could get longer and more athletic in one as much as they have in one recruiting cycle.
I've yet to actually get to see Janiah White play in person. I've seen him in person, but I've never actually seen him play. And one of the things that you are most concerned with is when you get a guy his size out of high school is
can he walk and chew gum at the same time?
Absolutely. Is he coordinated? Because, you know, just because you're big doesn't mean you're good. And, of course, you're a shot blocker in high school. You're 7 feet tall. So it's been interesting to hear that Janiah White has been able to progress pretty quickly and is not bad at all. Certainly smooth, as you mentioned.
The part that I've been disappointed in him is something minor, is his ability to catch the alley-oop. You would think that would be an easy ask, but he's not great at it. Now, granted, Michael Kaiser's really good at it, and Tex had a lot of really good alley-oop catchers in the last few years.
A la Jaren Johnson.
Jaren Johnson, Cordarius Johnson. So, I mean, that will come. He's probably not used to catching as many that he's been having to catch in practice. But that's something. And then we haven't even talked about all the players. Kedar Davis, he's Jaren Johnson 2.0 and maybe even more athletic than Jaren Johnson. I think he shoots the ball a little better than Jaren. He defends probably better than Jaren. He's probably the best defender on the team, and that's a team with Speedy Smith, the Conference USA Defensive Player of the Year last year. Merrill Holden, a 6'8 JUCO player that's got 3 years to play. He's got the most upside of anybody on the roster. Don't know if we'll see a lot from him this year because of depth, but he's somebody I expect a lot from down the road. Brandon Shepherd from Huntington in Shreveport, I think he'll be the lone redshirt player, in my opinion.
Right. Michael White mentioned that he was still working on his body, trying to eat better, trying to lose a little weight, trying to tone up, that type of deal. But certainly said that he could still be a good player for Louisiana Tech in the future. But as you mentioned, I don't think that he sees the court this year.
But you talked about Eric McCree. Eric McCree will play the position Chris Anderson played last year. Chris Anderson was about 6'5", 6'6 on a good day.
Yeah, Chris Anderson was 6'5". He played bigger than he actually was.
And I don't think Eric's quite 6'8". Let's call him 6'7". But you got somebody 6'7" playing that position and he's more athletic than Chris Anderson.
He's the player I'm most looking forward to seeing play this year.
During July, right before they went to the Bahamas, I saw some practices where he was filling it full from three-point line.
Well, that's what Mike White mentioned, was that Eric McCree was one of the best three-point shooters on the team as well. And you can spread the floor. I mean, just like a season ago, last year, you could spread the floor. I mean, you could have four men standing around the perimeter with Kaiser in the, you know, down low and just move the ball until somebody's open and shoot a three.
And Coach White even said that they got even simpler in their offensive plays and their schemes. And that's basically so that Speedy Smith, Alex Hamilton, Raheem Appleby can create, just make something. Go be you, Speedy. You've got here. I've given you 6'4", 6'3", 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", 6'10", 6'11". Hey, why not? We'll go ahead and throw a 7-footer out there. Go have fun.
And you make a good point. That's where Alex Hamilton exceeds. He can get to the bucket pretty much at will.
Yeah, Alex is a little nicked up right now. He missed the Bahamas. He's not 100% yet. That's the one I missed earlier. But he will be. He'll be fine. So, man, this could be a very special year for men's basketball in Ruston, Louisiana. If you haven't gotten your season tickets, you are making a mistake. Call the ticket office 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, and buy 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, however many you want. I'm sure they will be glad to sell you one, or the number of which you choose to buy. Let's take this break. Other side of the break, we'll give our mid-season reports on Bulldog football. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7, where I am showing my ignorance at Major League Baseball.
And I am vomiting in my mouth as the St. Louis Cardinals advance.
Where else would you vomit?
Well, you could always vomit out of your mouth. Regardless.
We've digressed big time.
St. Louis Cardinals advance
to the NLCS.
Bleak Tech Blue Radio Season 7 brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Y Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Dowling Smokehouse. Join us for this last segment on the Keller Williams Parish Y Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. 888-993-7762. As the season has went on, that name has gotten easier and easier to say. Of course, you can email your questions to us at radio@bleedtechblue.com, or you can utilize Twitter. Use the hashtag BTBRadio and tweet us your questions, and we'll answer them on the air.
Well, let's talk about the Bulldogs from a big picture standpoint. Coach Holt said that they like to get through six games and reevaluate where they are. And let's look offensively. Give the quarterback play a grade. I'll start it off. He's obviously, Cody Sokol has not been perfect. I'd give him a B minus thus far. Better than average. He's had some less than average performances, but I'd give him a B minus.
I was going to go with a C plus. Only a C plus, B minus, regardless. It's basically the same thing. But Cody Sokol has been better than what the alternative was. Certainly, he's looked good. In some games, he's looked poor in others. Honestly, I think the second half of the season, Cody Sokol will play better than he has. And a lot of that's going to be because of the addition of Carlos Henderson. I mean, Carlos has only played in a couple of games now. He's played in three games now. He's got 11 catches, nearly 200 yards. Having that big play threat, like Henderson, is going to help Sokol out.
I think going forward, Cody's probably the key to the season. He has to maintain not turning over the ball, and I think if we don't turn the ball over, we'll win out from here on.
So what would you give the grade?
For grade for Cody for the first half of the season, I'll say B minus.
Let's go to that Keller Williams Parish Y Partners hotline and our friend Dwayne on beautiful Lake Claiborne.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Not much, man.
Let's go back to basketball just a second. Who do you think is going to be able to give what Kenyon gave off the bench? That consistent 15 points, 12 points. You know, he could come in and knock down two, three, four three-pointers each night. And plus, you know, you could never tell when he was going to go off for 30.
I think that's Xavier Stapleton, but with him being a true freshman, you just don't know for sure. I could see it being Jacoby Boykins. My guess would be one of those two. I think we all agree that the starting five will be Speedy, Raheem, Alex, Eric McCree, and Kaiser will be the starting five. But to get those many points, you're going to need a it's not going to be Janiah White, although Janiah White's going to see maybe the sixth most minutes on the team, maybe the seventh most minutes on the team. But I would go Jacoby Boykins or Xavier Stapleton.
Okay. To me, that's watching this new team unfold, that's the part I'm most interested in, to see who's going to step up, because that kid was clutch. Considering what, you know, he was a rough kid. He came in, he bought into, and everything. So,
I agree with you wholeheartedly. You know that.
And I'm very excited about this year, as you know.
I know that very well, and I'm looking forward to it just as much as you are.
Talk to you later.
Thanks, Dwayne.
Bye.
Let's go back to the report card for the football team. Go to the running game. I haven't been as impressed as I thought I'd be with that group. I would give that group a C minus or a D plus. I agree with what you said, Ben, about Sokol, that he is the key to the season thus far. I don't think anyone dreamed that he would have come in and made that big of an impact this early. So, and I think that maybe one of the reasons that we're disappointed with the, or I'm disappointed with the run game, is because teams have been keying on it. And that's probably a lot to do with it. The production hasn't been there. But whenever the people, everybody's stacking the box on you, making you beat them through the air, that's going to happen.
I agree. I don't think the running game has been what I was expecting it to be. But then again, my expectations were probably a little high. When you have Kenneth Dixon in the backfield, you'd like to think that he's going to consistently go off for 120, 125 yards a game. And he is getting 100. He is getting 5 yards a carry. And I've been very pleased with Jared Kraft. 33 carries, over 100 yards now.
I'd give an A immediately to Jared Kraft.
Yeah, right. But as a whole, I'm not as low on him as you are. I'm going to say C plus, firmly average. I mean, Louisiana Tech is rushing for over 200 yards a game, so I'll give him a C plus.
I agree with Jared. I say right around C plus. Mainly, you know, like you said, Jonathan, they've been stacking the box on us, and we haven't been getting anything going between the tackles.
And you look at the receiving core, I think they've overperformed, overachieved. I'd give them a B plus, maybe even an A minus. Paul Turner has not been healthy all year. I think this bye week's going to help him, maybe more than it helps anybody. Sterling Griffin, we kept hearing that he was finally healthy, and this is the first year that he's been healthy since probably his freshman year of college, and he got his 6-year waiver. He's been good.
He has, but he's been non-existent the last couple of games.
He's a possession guy.
Yeah.
If you need a third down converted that's 11 yards or 10 yards, he's going to go get you a 15-yard comeback.
Sure, but Trent Taylor has really taken over kind of that go-to guy on a down where you absolutely have to come up with a first down. If it's third and long, Cody Sokol's been looking at Trent Taylor across the middle, and Taylor has played very well. Great for the wide receivers.
B plus, I'd say.
I'm going to give the wide receivers an A. I'm going to give the wideouts an A because of the production so far. Maybe part of it is Cody Sokol. But I'm going to give the receivers an A. The addition of Carlos Henderson has opened up the offense tremendously. Hunter Lee's having a great season so far. Trent Taylor, over 300 yards now, playing really, really well. And you still haven't seen what you can get out of a guy like Paul Turner. You still haven't really seen all that you're going to be able to get out of Sterling Griffin. And yet they've been probably the most productive group on offense.
Y'all both make a good point. I agree with you. A minus. Receivers have played exceptional through the first half of the season. Look forward to seeing Hunter Lee and Trent Taylor continue to lead the receiving corps.
Offensive line, they haven't been great. They haven't been terrible. I'd give them a B, just straight up B.
I'm going to give the offensive line a B plus. I think the offensive line has been able to keep Cody Sokol on his feet more than I expected against peer schools. I'm not worried about what they did against Auburn. I'm not worried about what they did against Oklahoma. I don't throw those games out. Against peer schools, against ULL, North Texas, last week against UTEP, that offensive line was able to keep Sokol on his feet, and that's what I'm looking for.
Ben?
Offensive line hasn't been vastly improved from last season. I'm going to go with a B.
Let's go special teams. So that won't take long. Punting hasn't been wonderful. The punt return team, punt coverage team, has not been good. The kickoff game has been good. It's probably been the best it's been since Matt Nelson. The field goal kicking has been pretty good, especially considering it's a redshirt freshman. I'd give that group an A.
The special teams are giving them an A.
No, probably a B because of how bad the punt coverage team has been.
I'm giving special teams a D. Special teams has been poor, for lack of there's just no other way to describe it. The punt coverage teams are not very good. The punt return teams are not very good. The field goal coverage teams are not great. The field goal returning has been better with the addition of Carlos Henderson, but still on his returns, he's averaging less than if he just took a knee. Field goal kicking has been all right. There's still no long range kicker there. Anything that's past 45, you're not going to get.
Which most teams don't have that.
I'm giving them a D.
I see where you're coming from. I'm trying to keep it in perspective, knowing that
you've
got a true sophomore at punter, you got a redshirt freshman at kicker. Are they good? No, but with what they have, and I'm not saying these guys are bad. I'm just saying they're inexperienced.
I'm going to go with the C. I think the, like you said, like y'all both said, I think the punt return, the punt coverage unit could be a lot better, but overall it's been pretty decent.
Defensively, defensive line, I've been disappointed with that group from getting pressure on a quarterback. Stopping the run, interior has been good. Houston Bates is a beast at D end. I don't know if Tech has had a an end since Matt Broha that plays the run and plays the pass consistently. And a lot of the reason that they have been disappointed with the D line is because they're missing Vontarius Dora. They're probably their best pass rusher because of how big and strong he is. But I'd give him a C.
I would give the defensive line a C as well. I've been underwhelmed with the performance as far as from a getting pressure on the quarterback standpoint. The defensive line is not being able to do that. They're not being able to get pressure on the quarterback with just four down linemen. Certainly, they've done well with stopping the run. I haven't been as impressed with Houston Bates getting pressure on the quarterback as I was hoping, but Houston Bates has shown that he's got a motor and that he can, like you mentioned, he can play the pass, he can play the run, he can get pressure on the quarterback. I think Houston Bates was a great addition.
And to add to Houston Bates, I think we've got to keep that one in perspective as well, because he's playing a role that Tech fans aren't used to seeing.
Right, yeah, of course.
He's playing a hybrid outside linebacker DN, so he's not rushing the passer every down like we're used to seeing IKN and Polly. If IK's on the field, odds are he's going after the passer. So that's not the role that Houston's playing. But, yes, I see where you're coming from.
Ben? I agree with y'all. I agree with the defensive line.
Ben knows that we're getting close to the end of the show. So linebackers, I think that group has been pretty stinking good. I'd give them a B-plus or an A-minus. Tony Johnson, why he wasn't starting a middle linebacker last year is a head-scratcher. Terrell Pinson, that addition of him moving down from safety to outside linebacker has been great. And Villamez has had a good year. And Feet's another guy that's nicked up. I think he'll be back after the
Villamez had a couple of sacks already this season. Terrell Pinson's had a couple of sacks. Tony Johnson's played much better than I expected. Just based on expectations alone, I would give the linebacking core an A.
I think the linebackers have played exceptional. One more guy I want to point out that's kind of stood out to me over the past couple of games is Nick Thomason. He's played well.
And Nick's a guy that redshirted last year, so they'll have him back next year at middle linebacker, which will be huge. And the secondary, we'll lump them all together. I'd give them probably a B. They have not given up very many big plays. The corners have played pretty well. They're probably what's bringing it down. The safeties get an A. The corners probably would get a C. But it's still an impressive group.
I'll give them a B as well. Xavier Woods and the play of the safeties has been out of this world.
Secondary's getting better each week, and I look for the corners to continue to improve each week. I'm going to say a B.
Good stuff, fellas. No predictions today because there's no game Saturday. UTSA next Saturday inside the Joe at 11 o'clock. If you got to stay Friday night in Ruston, make it work. They need your fanny in the seat. Same time, same place next week. We'll see you then. We'll talk a little UTSA football right at that time, and we'll see you then. Bye.
You've been listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio with Jonathan Ford. Listen to Bleed Tech Blue Radio every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on ESPN 96.